yellow light!
I'm walking here! I'm walking!
Good afternoon and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Friday. To get you through this crisis in a world where few things are reliable, we are reliable. It's Jason Rancho. We're live on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. We got a lot to get to. We only have 3 hours to do it. A huge, huge, huge bounce from reopening the economy. Tim Iman gets into huge trouble for comments he made on Facebook. Plus, more confusing guidance about the coronavirus. This hour of the Jason Rancho is brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The economy.
So we've been talking about the economy over the course of the last 11, 12 weeks or so. And I've said over and over and over again that the fundamentals of the economy are strong. However, they're not going to be strong forever. You can't shut down the economy forever and expect the fundamentals of the economy to remain as strong as they were going into the coronavirus crisis. And President Trump and so many others, they sensed that. They understood that there's a limit to the strength of this economy. There's only so long you can go keeping people out of work and hoping that you can quickly recover. And on this show, we were paying close attention to when the golf courses opened up. And the first weekend where we saw just nonstop people going to play golf, expensive golf. At first we said, okay, you know what, it kind of makes sense. There's this pent up demand. People just want to get out of the house. And so, okay, fine. The first week or so, you expect it to be fully booked. But then after the second week, it's still fully booked. It remained fully booked. Then you look at the casinos. And yes, you expect the same thing. There's pent up demand to get out of the house, even if you're spending some money. But so many people flocked to all of the casinos that were open here in Washington State. There were long lines at a time where some people, lots of people, were out of work. They were still going to the casino and they were still wasting money or winning money. And I said that that is the kind of strength that shows the economy is not hurting nearly as much as some people might fear. And it turns out the good news was we were right. The U.S. just added 2.5 million jobs in May. You heard it there on Fox News. The unemployment rate dropped to 13.3%. And according to The Hill, the May jobs report showed one of the largest one-month spikes in hiring in U.S. history. This happened after the country lost 20.7 million jobs in April.
And we saved millions of lives. And now we're opening, and we're opening with a bang. And we've been talking about the V. This is better than a V. This is a rocket ship.
It's a rocket ship, according to the president. The numbers shattered the expectations coming from the economists on both sides of the aisle, thinking that we would get another steep rise in joblessness, according to The Hill.
We had things that we were doing so well, and then it came in. But we're going to be back there. I think we're going to actually be back higher next year than ever before. And the only thing that can stop us is bad policy. Frankly, left-wing bad policy of raising taxes and Green New Deals and all of the things that you have been writing about long and hard that will stop it like you wouldn't believe.
This is why the president wanted to reopen the economy in a safe way, but in a more urgent way. He knows that when he reopens, the jobs are still going to be there. Not all of the jobs. There are going to be some jobs that are clearly not coming back, and a lot of them have to be specific to industries. When we're talking about restaurants, for example, a lot of those restaurants are not going to survive, and that means a lot of people are going to be out of work. But the fact of the matter is, the economy was strong going in, and that makes it a little bit easier, just a little bit easier, to rebound. Are we anywhere near where we were before the coronavirus crisis? No. We were not. We are not going to get there overnight. But this significant jump is very clearly good news. Very clearly good news. And good news on the economy is good news for President Trump's reelection campaign. The Democrats have tried to push scandal after scandal after scandal against him. And in many cases, they failed. Maybe not in polling, but the president was never doing polling. He was never doing well in the polling. And it's funny because I still maintain, regardless of what's happening right now, people think that in November it's going to be a referendum on either police brutality and Black Lives Matter, or maybe even on the coronavirus. Do you know what the big story was not long ago? Do you remember?
I mean, no. Besides no. coronavirus?
Coronavirus? No, before no. that.
Impeachment.
Impeachment. Do you think people are thinking about impeachment right now? Do you think that's at the front and center of their mind that they're going to say, you know what, man, this president, he was impeached? People forget things very quickly. It doesn't mean that they weren't important at the time, and it doesn't mean they're not important at the time that you forget. But when it comes to voting, in a lot of cases, in most cases, people will make a decision based on what impacts them personally. And the economy impacts everybody personally. And on the economy, the president wins. On the economy, the president wins. Now, right now, there's some activist journalists who understand that. And so they want to get in the way of any good news. They want to focus on the bad news. Bad news that was not the fault of the president. The president didn't bring the coronavirus here. I know that some Democrats want us to believe that. China is responsible, not President Trump. But it's interesting because there was a moment today during this briefing by the president on the economy. Yamiche Alcindor, the journalist slash analyst slash opinion editor, whatever it is her official title is, she's an activist. She holds a political position, which I don't care about. You can hold whatever political position you want. Let's just be clear. She's not a journalist because she's not objective. And she got into it with the president.
Black unemployment went up by 0.1%. Asian American unemployment went up by 0.5%. How is that a victory?
I love the phrasing of the question. How is that a victory? When we had the lowest unemployment rate for African Americans in history under this president, did he get any credit whatsoever for that? Did Yamiche Alcindor go out there and say, hey, you know what? Kudos to you. This is a job well done. Instead, they focus on a number that's not as high as it used to be. Again, not through any fault of the president. The president didn't do this. Everyone had to have the economy shut down. That was the belief at the time. Some, by the way, still want to keep the economy shut down. And that, of course, is going to lower the employment rate. It took a long time to get to that historic high for black unemployment rate under this president. That's not going to just jump back up the same way unemployment rates for everybody isn't going to go back to 3.3 or whatever it was. We're still at 13.3%. So it's a dishonest question at the beginning. It's a bad faith question.
You are something.
How is that a victory?
Thank you very much. It's been an honor. This is such a great achievement. Feel so good about it. This is just the beginning. The best is yet to come.
It's just the beginning. But Yamiche Alcindor tried to focus on the negative while never, ever, ever focusing on the positive. If the positive helps President Trump, she doesn't say anything. When it's all negative, then she jumps up. And this is not negative. This is step one in a multi-step process to getting unemployment rates back to the historic lows. For every American. For every single American. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So Tim Iman, of course, GOP gubernatorial candidate, a leading candidate, is taking some criticism for some remarkably insensitive comments that he made via Facebook Live the other day. He decided to use the imagery and the example of the murder of George Floyd to go after Jay Inslee. Now, some people may agree with the big picture point, which is a lot of Washingtonians are suffering. And I think it's fair to say Washingtonians are suffering. I don't think having that position somehow means that you're dismissing the pain and anger and angst that a lot of people are feeling as it relates to George Floyd. But Tim Iman decided to use very specific language that I don't think is appropriate in a circumstance like this.
I mean, it's agonizing to sit through because you're watching something that you should never have to see, where after 5 minutes of it, he goes 3 more minutes when the guy wasn't even moving anymore, and they kept that knee on the back of the neck. And I can't help but look at that same situation and not visualizing Jay Inslee with his knee on the back of the necks of 7 million people in the state of Washington. Actually, I take that back. Only the people that Jay Inslee says are non-essential does he have the knee on the back of the necks of those people. He's saying that private businesses, small businesses, all of you, I'm going to put my knee on the back of your neck and I'm going to hold you down. That is exactly what's going on right now.
No. No. You can make the point without using insensitive language. You can. And this is not political correctness. This is just about being appropriate. This is about using common sense and common judgment. And I've said this multiple times. When people use Hitler comparisons or Nazi comparisons, I always say, why are you doing that? You can make the same point without mentioning Hitler and Nazis. Don't try to co-opt the pain suffered by Jews to make your point, even if I might agree with your point. And the same thing applies here. That is being provocative for the sake of being provocative. You could make the same exact argument, and arguably a more effective argument, by not positioning it in that way. You can say the focus right now is on the pain and suffering of the murder of George Floyd. But we also can't forget the fact that there are so many people right now who are suffering in Washington due to Jay Inslee's policies. It would be just as powerful, just as accurate, but not offensive. So why choose to do something like this? Now, there's some folks right now who I imagine are screaming at the radio, justly, that there is a double standard in how language like this is being treated. Because today, for example, during a Joe Biden press conference campaign on the phone, Representative Brenda Lawrence says that African-Americans who are unemployed right now feel like they have, quote, the knee on their throat, and then goes on to attack President Trump. Now, of course, that is also incredibly insensitive language in the context of what's happening right now in this country. People are not going to jump on Brenda Lawrence. They're not going to jump on Democrats who use the same kind of language. And I get that double standard. But we still have to be able to condemn the insensitive language. Unless we want to be hypocrites. Unless we want to be hypocritical. Go after Tim Iman for that language the same way you would go after Brenda Lawrence or anybody else who uses that language and tries to co-opt a movement to either go after a political opponent or to benefit themselves politically. And that's what Tim Iman did here. And that's why people are getting upset with him. This one, he brought on himself. And I don't know why. Because it was just wholly unnecessary. And when he talks, when he gives press briefings, whether it's virtual or not, people show up, the press is there. And now he's going to try to spin this into it not being that big of a deal. He was pushed by King 5's Chris Egan.
Well, I think there's no doubt that anybody who watched that video, and I certainly did, that 8 minutes is excruciating. Watching the first 5 minutes is tough enough, but the fact that he kept it on for an extra 3 minutes, I mean, it made my blood boil. But I couldn't help but notice that Jay Inslee is doing a very similar kind of thing in the state of Washington because he's holding down our entire economy, and people are really suffering from that. And I think those are the silent killers that are going on right now. That's really frustrating for people to see. I get emails every day from people that are talking about the increase in suicides, medical conditions that aren't being treated. And Jay Inslee does not seem to be acknowledging that kind of pain. And I think the media is too focused in on that story and not focused enough on the real pain that's going in our state.
So then make the point without using the insensitive language. And we got a text from the 206 at 1-800-465-8770. Who said, damn it, Tim, I want to vote for him, but this was a stupid mistake. I don't know if it was a mistake. I think it was intentional. I don't think you use language like this by accident. I think this was intentional. And I think he thinks it would get him some press at a time where, yes, it's very difficult for any Republican to campaign. There's no doubt about that. But this went too far. He's alienating people unnecessarily. You can bring people together against some of the policies of Jay Inslee. There are lots of policies that are hurting people, closing down businesses, choosing to inconsistently apply the stay-at-home order. saying that he's going to exploit the coronavirus crisis to push fringe environmentalist policies. There's lots of stuff to go after him for. So why alienate people unnecessarily with a comment that was tone deaf? I said Chris Egan, it's actually Chris Daniels who was doing the interview.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt that what's tone deaf is Jay Inslee thinking that firing a million people is going to not have some kind of negative consequences.
I hate answers like that. I hate answers like that because it's very transparent that he doesn't want to directly answer. And no one is served when he does that. And the candidates aren't served when they do that. It's maddening because it's not necessary. It's not necessary. And it causes people to have the conversation about whether or not you're exploiting or co-opting a movement rather than talking about the issue you want to bring attention to. Do you think people are having the conversation right now? Well, you know what? He kind of makes a point. No, the way that this is being positioned in a media atmosphere that's already going to be unfair to most Republicans, he's making it so easy to make it about the controversial statement. And that's a shame because you could make a reasonable comment about both.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt that people can have compassion and empathy for more than one person. Everybody in the state is suffering right now. Everyone who saw that video is outraged by it. But it simply doesn't mean that we can't talk about other issues at the exact same time. And I think everybody that saw that video, and I certainly did, I choked up watching it. But when you hear stories of people that, I mean, I heard of a husband that committed suicide because his business was destroyed and his wife, the only way he could take care of her was to commit suicide in order to be able to, for her to be able to get the insurance to take care of herself. That's one of just a thousand stories I've heard during the last 8 weeks, and it's only getting worse every single day.
And couldn't he have made that point without alienating literally anyone? He could have. He chose not to, and that's a shame. Meanwhile, last night, the good news. It was peaceful but tense on Capitol Hill during the protests. Fawn Dublin, a protester, spoke to Q13.
It's easier to get lost and say, no, this is crazy, this is destruction, we're losing our city. But then when you have days like this, you remember and you get remotivated to come out and be peaceful and do the right thing. And you see that there are different ways to kind of be heard or at least be seen.
Now, unfortunately, yet again, there was a large group of agitators who decided to get involved, who decided to take advantage, and things got unnecessarily tense. And in a lot of ways, you again had people justifying some of the protesting turning into acts of violence or making justification, excuses for folks who are calling all cops murderers. That doesn't serve anyone. And it's exactly the same thing that I hit Tim Iman for. There's no reason to just lob insults at cops. There's no reason to do that. If you want to talk about a policy discussion, let's do it. If you want to have a specific change be made, let's do it. And what gets in the way of people taking your side, screaming all cops are racist murderers or throwing bricks at them. I don't want to sit at a table discussing any issue with someone who thinks all cops are bastards while justifying violence against cops. I want nothing to do with you. Let's find out what else is trending.
Sports ball.
Let's do that again. Come on. Do it again.
What's trending? The sports ball.
It's important that we do this correctly because I have to say, I don't know if I'm annoyed or in awe of a comment that Russell Wilson just made. He was doing an interview and he was talking about Colin Kaepernick. Now, unlike Drew Brees, who did not quite get out of his original statement unscathed, Russell Wilson is being praised for something that he said about Colin Kaepernick, and it had nothing to do with politics, although obviously the real reason why we're talking about Colin Kaepernick right now is the politics of it all, is the decision that he made to make a political statement while the national anthem was being sung.
You know, I think that he definitely could be on our roster for sure. You know, he can do a lot of great things, you know. He's a really talented player, that's for sure.
Now, if Russell Wilson wasn't one of the best quarterbacks in the league, if Russell Wilson wasn't guaranteed the starting quarterback position, and if Colin Kaepernick had happened to be a different play a different position, his comments would be like, oh, good for you. But when you say that, knowing that the guy's never going to play unless, God forbid, knock on wood, doesn't happen, God forbid you get hurt, there's just a little hint of being disingenuous. Just like a little tiny hint. And I love Russell Wilson. I really do. I like his attitude. And I like that he's so polished. I like that about him. However, saying he could very easily play on the team when he would never actually play on the team except for maybe a couple games in the preseason, it's just a little disingenuous.
Yeah,
just a little tiny bit.
There won't be a whole lot of playing going on if the Seahawks did have Colin Kaepernick. I mean, he has enough talent to make it in the NFL, even whether it's a backup or not.
If he was in any other position, that comment would be very different. That comment would be like, okay, he backs him because he knows he's good enough to play. He's not good enough to play on the Seahawks. And so to say, come on over, you're good enough to play when you know he's not going to play, was just a little off-putting to me. In a world where I generally really appreciate the way he handles himself, and he's trying to be classy here, right? I don't think his intent here was to be disingenuous, but it rings that way.
I mean, in reality, you and I are talented enough to be the backup on the Seattle Seahawks. If three goes down, the team is screwed.
Yeah,
so.
This idea. Yeah, okay, come on. And I don't want to pick on him because I really like him. And I hope he doesn't take it as picking on him. I assume that he's a podcast subscriber. That's my assumption.
You don't think he listens live every day from 3 to 6?
I don't think he listens live all the time. I think he's a podcast subscriber, just like so many other people are. Oh, you're not? Well, that's silly. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll go ahead and send you a link so you can actually subscribe and listen to the show. So in case you miss something, or you like something so much you want to go back and re-listen, it's very easy. Text podcast to 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, looters and rioters get arrested. Celebrities come to their defense. Huh? We'll get into it when we return on the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on this Friday afternoon. We have some breaking news. Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan says she's asking Police Chief Carmen Bess to immediately issue a directive that bans the use of tear gas for 30 days. At the protests in the city of Seattle. And so we're taking a tool away from law enforcement officials to make sure that they can maintain the peace. But beyond that, a tool that can help protect fellow officers. And while I would have no problem if this was a result of peaceful protests, I have a problem because this is the result of rioting and instigators. And whether or not that's the reality, because we hear from a bunch of folks, hey, these are just agitators, fine, I agree with that. But the perception is when you riot and when you loot, you end up winning some kind of concession. And if the use of tear gas was appropriate a week ago or 2 weeks ago and was a legitimate way to protect lives and property 2 weeks ago, then what has changed? What has changed? The anger as a result of the police using tear gas? They used it because people were throwing bricks and bottles and rocks at them. Because people were choosing to break into various businesses in downtown Seattle. Were there peaceful protests? Yes. Are the vast majority of the protesters peaceful? 100%. Unfortunately, there are agitators and they are making this worse. And of course, rather than condemn them, we're justifying their anger, quote unquote. Even though a good portion of these folks who have chosen to loot and riot are bad actors, opportunists, anarchists who are exploiting, co-opting this movement for their own political gain. And rather than call them out, you've got a whole bunch of celebrities choosing to pay for their bail. I'd have no problem if you were paying for the bail of someone who maybe accidentally got caught up in a peaceful protest that turns into a riot. But that's not how this money is being used. They have no idea. You got celebrities like Seth Rogen and Chrissy Teigen, Don Cheadle, Katy Perry, Cynthia Nixon, Janelle Monáe, Harry Styles. Ben Schwartz is on this list, but I don't think anyone knows who Ben Schwartz is.
No.
I mean, I know who he is, but I don't think anybody else does.
He's
a character actor. They've decided to give a whole bunch of money to these different funds to help get people out of jail. And it's funny because they want to be seen as woke. Steve Carell, he's one of them. He's woke. He cares about you and the message that you send. But the second you step foot on his private property, or any of the private property of any of these celebrities, their armed security will ascend on you within a heartbeat. And by the way, they'll call 911 and they'll haul you off to jail. And they won't think twice about giving you money for the bail because they're the ones that sent you there. But in something like this, because they want you to know that they care, rather than actually caring, rather than actually doing anything, beyond tweeting and sending messages on Facebook, they'll just donate some money because it buys them some social currency. That's what this is about. Steve Carell, has he been involved in any meaningful way on Black Lives Matter or any issue of policing? Has he been there wandering the streets with everybody else? 2 weeks ago, was he out there posting about how this is an important issue? Or, like so many other woke urbanite progressives who are going on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, screaming out, posting memes between photos, selfies of their new Lululemon zip hoodies. What are they doing? They jump on to a bigger national movement to tell you that they care. And if you want to know why nothing ever gets done in a meaningful way after most of these movements, is because you've got a huge portion of folks, who only get involved for about a couple days, maybe a week, because they think it makes them more popular with their friend group on Twitter. Though you don't ask them, they'll tell you very proudly that they're heroes for what it is they're doing. But they're only talking about the stuff that they do. They're only talking about how woke they are. But they'll probably tell you that they're against racism. They're anti-racist, implying that other people are pro-racism. That they're anti-bigotry. Yet earlier in the year, when Jews were getting beat up on the streets of New York and New Jersey, I didn't hear a peep from any of these celebrities or these woke urbanites who suddenly say that they care about fighting bigotry. Where were you then? Where were you then? And the problem with doing something like this, because I certainly don't begrudge anyone who feels suddenly inspired to get involved. I don't. There was an injustice that was done against George Floyd. Every single person seems to be on the same page with that. But when you have folks like this stepping up in this way, not really caring, and just want to give the impression of caring, it begets more people pretending to care. More people posting on Twitter and Facebook, and then before you know it, you end up thinking that the movement is bigger than they are, and you end up giving them more power than they deserve. Because right now, there is a large part of this movement that is calling for the defunding of police. Defunding the police. Some literally want to abolish the police. Now, do I think Steve Carell believes that? No. But he's helping give it cover by making the movement seem bigger than it is and more mainstream than it is. The average soccer mom who's a progressive who's posting a meme on Twitter that she doesn't even understand, or the dude who's posting it on Instagram, something he also doesn't understand. He's giving this movement, the fringe part of the movement, more cover, because you think they would ever speak out against any of this? Do you think they would ever speak out against any of the looting or the rioting? They're scared to death of offending someone, which is racist, by the way, because number one, they think that calling out looting is somehow going to be offensive to the black community. Why? Regardless of race, people look at looting, people look at rioting, and they're repulsed. They find it odious. And for you to just assume that, oh, black people must like this, that's racist. It's literal racism. My friend Dan Bongino, I call him my friend because he retweets me sometimes and sometimes he likes my stuff. He does not follow me, but I'm calling him my friend for social currency points.
You guys are super close.
He was on Fox News, had this to say.
To the celebrity morons and epic life losers who think it's a good idea to start a bail fund to bail out people slitting the throats of cops, engaging in attempted murder on the streets of Dallas, and beating the snot out of a guy in the streets of Portland, you disgust me. You are absolute human filth and the dregs of society in your Beverly Hills mansions, you beasts. While you sit up there and do that while America is burning to the ground, I hope no American ever goes to see another damn movie again from one of these idiots supporting this nonsense.
100% agree. Except I want to see the new Fast and Furious, and the Top Gun movie looks actually really good.
Nope, can't do it.
You sure?
Yep. Dean just said so.
And the ironic part is Steve Carell is in a new movie coming out that I kind of want to see.
And he just came out with a new TV show.
I hear it's awful.
Yeah, you won't be watching it. It's
I don't
up
care.
Your alley.
So it's called Space Force, and it's basically, I'm told, it's just making fun of Trump or the idea of the space, whatever it is. I don't care if a TV show or movie mocks a belief I have or a person I support or maybe. I don't care about any of that so long as it's good.
No, it's bad. That's why you won't be watching this,
and
it's horrible.
That's the difference. When someone chooses to make their content exclusively out of the hatred that they have for whatever their target is of their comedy or whatever it is, that's when I stop watching because it's just not good. It's just not good. Veep, which is my favorite show, the character, Selena Meyer, she's a Democrat. And they made it, to be fair, they make fun of both sides, but it's smart, it's funny, I like it. Stuff that just makes fun of people for the sake of, I don't like you, I'm going to make fun of you, that's just boring to me.
No, it's a bad show. I watched like the first episode and a half.
We got some text messages today saying that.
It's not good.
1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. 1-800-465-8770. I'll be on Tucker Carlson later tonight talking about the thing I just talked about. That was really just a little bit of my prep because I was supposed to go on today to talk about the Tammy Morales audio where she supports looting or endorses looting. And then they said, oh no, we like the story you posted today on Newsweek. You should talk about that. And I was thinking, well, I kind of wrote that like last week. I don't even remember everything I wrote, so I had to just do some prep.
You're going on Tucker?
Did I not tell you that?
No. You never tell me that.
You got to remind me to be better at promoting myself. I don't like talking about myself or the things I do. You know, I don't like to post on social media and stuff. And obviously, when I'm doing TV shows, even though it's incredible because it shows that my voice is growing in this market and everyone's looking at me as sort of the next voice of a generation of conservatives, you know I don't like to toot my own horn and pat my own back. So I do need you to just maybe next time just get in my ear and say, Jason, you're on Tucker Carlson tonight. That's a big deal. No one else in the building is doing Tucker Carlson on a regular basis, and maybe you should say something about that. Don't do that because that's too braggadocious for my taste.
I can't remind you if you don't tell me.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That's fair. It's a Jason Rant Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really, really do appreciate you tuning in on this Friday afternoon. We're in a pandemic, in case you forgot, but I am assuming it's not considered the same public health emergency than it was just really 2 weeks ago. We had a few weeks ago, Inslee said he could restrict your constitutionally protected right to go to church and pray or go to a gun shop and buy a weapon. But yesterday he talked about the importance of our First Amendment rights as it relates to protesting. Now, I'm not one of these people who wants to tell the government to get all these protesters back at home. I'm fine. I encourage people to enjoy any of their rights responsibly. But I just find it incredibly hypocritical that all of a sudden they're saying, oh, okay, it's not that big of a deal. They're either lying to us that it's not a bigger deal than it is because they don't want to offend anyone who's engaged in their First Amendment rights, or they overplayed their hand in some regard. Now, a big part of the reason why you're not getting a lot of the scolding coming from public health officials or politicians as it relates to the protests is because they agree with the cause. And since they agree with the cause, they're not willing to scold a bunch of folks. And again, I don't need to be scolded. It's just interesting the double standard that's at play here. On our sister station, Cairo Radio, Dr. Angela Rasmussen, a Columbia University virologist, said this.
It's definitely an issue in terms of public health for COVID transmission to be engaging in these types of mass gatherings and protests. But it's also a critical public health issue to address racism and the effects of violence.
Okay. So it is, in fact, a public health issue to go out and protest. The chair of the New York City Council Health Committee, his name is Mark Levine. He tweeted, let's be clear about something. If there is a spike in coronavirus cases in the next 2 weeks, don't blame the protesters. Blame racism. No, I'm going to blame the protesters, not racism. The protesters are the ones who are going out, and they're the ones who would be presumably contracting the coronavirus and spreading it. Racism didn't spread it. That statement, that tweet isn't based in science or data. It's based in ideology. We went from the virus not caring about whether or not you're a Republican or a Democrat, caring about whether you're white or black or Asian. And now we're at, well, you know, it's actually part of systemic racism. No, it's not. And it's okay to say it's not. You could say, look, understand you're going out there, you're protesting. And if you agree with the protest, go ahead, say it. I not only do I agree with your right to protest, I agree with all the messages that are coming out of your mouth. But just remember that we still are in the middle of a pandemic, and you got to be responsible. Now, when the perception is it's a bunch of white conservatives going out and protesting for gun rights or for the right to go to church or temple or a mosque, when it comes to that, there's lots of scolding. Oh, it's so irresponsible. You're going to be the reason. You will be the reason why we can't move into the next phase. You going out there and wanting to reopen your business, it's going to kill grandma. How quickly did we go away from that? You wanting to open your business safely so people can go get a haircut. You do that, you want to kill grandma and grandpa. But now none of that language whatsoever. None whatsoever. Not even the hint of it. The tone has changed dramatically. And I suppose I'll take that. If it means that we can actually start to reopen our society. And today, of course, we got another step closer. Snohomish and Pierce counties are now officially in phase number two, although it was sloppily revealed. Because people who got it were like, wait, so you approved our... Is today we can do it? Or tomorrow? Or Monday? What are we doing? Can we do it now? Turns out you can do it now. And in King County, they moved to 1.5. But the question still remains, are we still in a public health emergency? Or have we moved on to a public health crisis that isn't quite at the level of emergency? Carol Markowicz wrote something in the New York Post on this topic, and she spoke with Fox News.
Well, I think they're afraid to say to the protesters, well, you can't do this, because obviously they're protected by the First Amendment. And I'm fully in support of the protesters in the streets, you know, doing what they need to do. It's not about that. It's about that the rules no longer make any sense. You know, we have the situation where the beaches in New York, you can't go swimming. And in California, you can go to the beach. You can go swimming, but you can't go to the beach. And as the mayor of Miami, who was on right before me, said their beaches are closed completely. I mean, Miami's in the mid-80s this week. Open the beaches. Let's have a pressure release of all the people that have been home for all these months and been told what to do and been following directions and yet still have no release from their leadership to be outside and have a normal life or a normal-ish life.
Well, in Michigan, they got the release. Gretchen Whitmer announced earlier in the week on Monday that she's lifting the stay-at-home order. And it's going to be effective starting on Monday. And that means there are a lot of easing of the restrictions on gatherings, on businesses reopening. But she only did it because the protests started. And so I do think it is a reasonable question to start to ask, given the current state of affairs and how the stay-at-home orders are being implemented, did they overreact? Or are they giving in because of political pressure? Whether we're talking about Governor Inslee or Governor Whitmer or Governor Newsom in California or Cuomo in New York, whatever it is, did they overstate the emergency or are they now downplaying it because they either support the cause or don't want to create a bigger issue within the cause because a lot of folks are angry? I mean, I suppose it can be that it's just coincidental that 2 weeks ago, First Amendment rights didn't matter as it relates to worship, but now it does matter to our First Amendment rights to protest, but also it's just not that big of a deal anymore. And how exactly will folks react 2 weeks from now? Because we have to wait a little under 2 weeks from now. It would be a little bit, about a week and a half, when we start to get the numbers, because it takes about 14 days to get the numbers of people who are actually symptomatic now, who are going in for testing and turn out that they're positive for coronavirus. In 2 weeks, when we get those numbers, and let's say there's a huge spike, let's say there's a huge spike in Seattle because of these protests, does that mean we go from 1.5 back to 1? Does that mean in Snohomish County they go from 2 to 1? And at that point, I think there's some counties out there like Garfield and Lincoln that might already be at phase number 3. Do they go from 3 to 2? These are reasonable questions, I think, that need to be asked and answered. Maybe that'll be my next question.
You're not getting another question.
I thought my question was well received.
You got one.
I got one with the governor during his press briefing, but I got one with the governor when he was part of the Seattle one.
Yeah, you got your one.
I got it because people are scared of this show. We bring a lot of attention to issues, and I do that because of the audience. They're scared of you. You have a lot of power. It's the Jason Rance Show.